everyone. I hope you're all doing so well and welcome back to the Criminal Makeup Podcast. Each episode, we dive into the minds of some of the worst criminals in history. And today we are covering a case that creeps me out. This case just really blows my mind and it's not like really overcovered either. So you probably have never heard of this case. And today we are going to be covering the case of Ming Sen Shu. And this guy, he possibly has one of the creepiest backstories I've ever come across. All I'm going to say is Freud would have a field day with this case. Oh yeah, we have mommy issues. Ugh. So Ming, when he was 15 years old, he was attending high school and he developed a crush on his maths teacher. Now, this was not like a normal, ordinary teenage crush. Oh no, no. Ming became obsessed with his maths teacher. And this was a woman called Mary Stopher. And then when Ming eventually left high school, he couldn't stop thinking about his maths teacher. He didn't leave his teenage crush behind. He let it consume his life. Until eventually Ming started a campaign of stalking that lasted almost 15 years. And then one day Ming decided to take action and make the fantasies in his head a reality. And tragically, two young children would get pulled into this. Mary's 8-year-old daughter, Beth, but then a completely just innocent child that had nothing to do with anyone in this case, who was 6-year-old Jason Wilkman.
Yes, Bethy. Are you okay?
Yes.
Is Mommy okay?
Yes. It's fine, Dad. We can't talk anymore.
When can you come home?
I don't know. Can you okay, Dad? See you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye, sweetie.
And this case is just so creepy and so heartbreaking and so infuriating at the same time. So that is what we're going to get into today. So let's jump in. So Ming Sen Shu was born on the 15th of October, 1950, making him a Libra. And he was born in Taiwan to Chinese parents, Mary and Jim Shu. His parents were both high achievers. His mom was a mathematician and she worked as a maths teacher across different universities in Taiwan. And the fact that she's a maths teacher is very significant in today's case. Like I said, Ming has some mommy issues. His dad also worked at various universities in Taiwan as a forestry researcher. And he was very successful in his field. He was so successful and well-respected in his field that one day when Ming was 7, his dad was headhunted and offered a job at the University of Minnesota in the US. And his dad, Jim, accepted the job. And the family was so excited about this because it was actually their dream to one day move to the US. So it was in 1957 when the family relocated and his dad became head of the forestry department in the University of Minnesota. And his mom also got a job at the University of Minnesota as a mathematician. And then it wasn't long after when the family moved to the US that Ming's parents went on to have two more children quite close together, two more boys called Charles and Ron. And the family were living the American dream. However, by the time that Ming turned 11 years old, tragedy struck because his dad, Jim, suddenly passed away. And the whole family, understandably, were absolutely devastated. And this is actually where Ming's problems start, really. Because when Ming's dad was literally lying on his deathbed, he said something very significant to Ming. He said that in accordance to Chinese tradition, Ming was now going to be the oldest man, the oldest, eldest male son in the house, meaning that he had to take care of the whole family, that he was essentially in charge. He was now the head of the household. Now, this is not just Chinese tradition. I feel like you see this a lot of times where the eldest sibling takes on responsibility if the tragedy happens where a parent does pass away. That is really, really common. But Ming took this maybe a bit too literally. He became an absolute nightmare. He didn't step into that almost like fatherly figure. He didn't step into a really caring person. He actually became an abuser. So his two younger brothers at this time were aged 6 and 3. And then Ming at this point is about 11. He could almost be 12 at this point. So all three are very young. And Ming decided to treat his two younger brothers as his personal slaves. And I truly mean that. Ming told his two younger brothers that they had to comply with every single thing that he told them. So if Ming wanted food, the two younger brothers had to prepare the food, give him the food. If Ming wanted his room tidying, the two younger brothers would have to do it. Every single day when Ming returned home from school, the two younger brothers had to be there waiting for him. They had to take his bag, his coat, everything. They had to hang it all up. They had to take his books into his room. They also had to take off Ming's socks and shoes. And then Ming literally would just go and sit on the sofa and he would dictate to his younger brothers, clean this, get me this food, I want this. Ming would also require his younger brothers to make him hot soup every single day with the exact same number of crackers every single day. He also had to have a glass of milk and this had to be served to him in front of the TV. And if the brothers, they didn't comply with his demands exactly how Ming had ordered them, for example, if they didn't fill his milk glass enough, or if they gave him just one less cracker than what he wanted, he would beat them. This 11-year-old boy would beat up his two younger brothers. And this would be vicious, violent beatings as well. Something that you wouldn't expect to come from an 11-year-old. He would beat his younger siblings with a belt. Like, seriously, have you ever heard of something like this before? I mean, I know we talk about a lot of abuse in childhoods in these videos, but to just think of an 11-year-old beating up their younger siblings with a belt, almost becoming this dictator in their own home. And this went on for years. Ming would abuse and dominate his younger brothers, and Ming pretty much ruined their childhood. His two younger brothers, they grew to absolutely hate him. But then the punishments, they started to escalate. Ming wasn't satisfied anymore with just beating up his younger siblings with a belt. There was one time when his younger brother, Ron, who was aged about 5 or 6 at the time, he had done something that Ming didn't like. I don't exactly know what he did, but as punishment, Ming put his younger brother in the oven. I know, what the hell? He put his brother in the oven and shut the door. And first of all, I can't believe that his brother even fit in the oven, but that is what I read. He put his whole brother in the oven and he kept turning the oven on and off. It is just insane. And you might be thinking, where the bloody hell is the mom? Does she not know about this? Like, what is going on? But she did know about it. She did know. The two younger brothers would often go running to their mom, crying because of the punishments, because of how they were being treated. And unbelievably, every single time, their mother just said, there is nothing I can do. Ming is the head of the household. We have to do what he wants. We have to do what he says. She said that Ming, at the end of the day, was just looking after his younger brothers. Mm-mm. No, 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 no. And that is just all kinds of messed up. Really, really is. So now we get to Ming in his teenage years. So he's just reached the age of 13 and things do not get better from here. No, they actually get worse because now Ming has reached that age where he has started to get certain urges. And this is where his sexual deviancy begins. So pretty much straight away, Ming turned into a peeping Tom. He would go around the neighborhood peering into as many windows as he could. And he did gain a reputation around the neighborhood as just being a creep. But it wasn't just that. Now we get to the mommy issues, and I'm really sorry, this is going to creep every single one of you out, because Ming started to develop a sexual interest in his own mom. Like I said, Freud would have a field day with this case. So it all started with Ming trying to force his younger brothers to go into their mother's room when she was asleep, so in the night, and feel her breasts. Yeah, Ming tried to force his younger brothers to go and feel their mom's breasts. And it's like, what the actual hell? Like, what the hell? Thankfully, the brothers refused to do this. And I'm sure they got some sort of punishment or beating for refusing to do this, but they did refuse. So instead, over the course of the next 6 months, Ming himself would creep into his mother's room when she was sleeping at night, climb into her bed, and would feel her breasts himself. And this next part, I just have to stop for a second because this is truly, oh God, this is makes me feel so creeped out. It's so disgusting. So there was this one time, and I'm sure this probably happened more than once, but there was one occasion where Ming had crept into his mother's room at night and his mom actually woke up. She looked down and found Ming under the covers with a flashlight in his hand, and it turns out that Ming had cut a hole in her pajamas and was in the process of inspecting her genitals. What the actual hell? Like I said, this has to be one of the creepiest backstories ever in a case. And unbelievably, the mom did nothing. The mom did nothing. I am sorry. What the bloody hell? She decided to just ignore the situation. I think she was probably hoping that it would just go away. The problem would just go away. There would be no need to do anything. However, just a few months later, when Ming was only 14, he became even more of a troublemaker because he had started to set fire to various apartment blocks in his neighborhood. So he is an abuser, a sexual deviant, and now he's an arsonist. That's a really good combination. And thankfully, he was arrested at some point for this, and he was ordered to undergo a psychiatric evaluation, which is where this video should end. But unfortunately, it doesn't. Because when he was having this psychological evaluation, this is when his mom finally admitted to what Ming was doing. The fact that he was creeping into her bedroom every single night, that he was feeling her breasts, that he was inspecting her vagina. And when the doctors heard this, they thought that he needed serious help, which I think he did, and he was admitted to an adolescent psychiatric unit, which was the best place for him. He could have gotten some help, he could have gotten a diagnosis, medication, treatments, and it was recommended that he was going to be held in this unit for a very long time because there was something seriously wrong and he needed a lot of treatment. This is where this should end. I shouldn't even be talking about Ming right now, because this is where he could have gotten help and this is where people could have intervened. However, it turns out that someone filled out the paperwork wrong. Just a simple human error. And the information about Ming was never filed into the system. So although doctors had written on his file that he could pose a serious danger to society, because it wasn't filed properly, Ming was released from the unit after only spending a few days there, which is just so infuriating, so incredibly infuriating. So we now get to the fall of 1965. Ming is now 15 years old, and this is literally just after he has been released from the unit. And Ming had gone into a new year at high school, and this is where he was assigned to start attending a new algebra class. And the teacher of this algebra class was a woman called Mary Stopher. And this is just so, so frustrating because Ming should never have even met Mary. He should be in that unit getting treatment because Ming would become infatuated with Mary, absolutely obsessed. So Mary Stopher was born on the 20th of June 1943. She was born in Minnesota and she came from a very close-knit religious family. And Mary has been described as just such a kind, caring, generous person, and she was also an incredibly high achiever. She graduated high school in 1961 before going on to study for a math's degree at college. In 1964, she married her high school sweetheart, who was a man called Irv. And then in 1965, when Mary was 22 years old, Mary graduated and she instantly found a job as a math and algebra teacher at the Alexander Ramsey High School in Roseville, Minnesota, which is the exact same high school that Ming is currently attending. So Ming starts his new algebra class and he has this new 22-year-old teacher, Mary Stopher, and Ming becomes obsessed almost instantly with her. And we're not talking just like a regular teenage crush. We're talking about full-on obsession, infatuation. And what was it about Mary that Ming loved so much? Well, it was because Mary reminded him of his own mother. Yep, I told you, mommy issues, bloody hell. And the two women, they were incredibly similar. First of all, they have the same initials. So we have Ming's mom, who is Mei Shu, MS, and then we have Mary Stopher, MS. They are both maths teachers. Not a coincidence. They also had a very similar dress sense, which was very modest. It was very toned down. Neither one of them wore makeup, no jewelry. Think of like that typical 1950s, 1960s housewife. That is kind of how they both dressed. And Ming had realized that his sexual desires around his own mom were inappropriate. So he basically just passed those desires that he had for his mom onto Mary. And these sexual fantasies that Ming started to have about Mary, they were extreme. Ming experienced fantasies that are usually associated with a narcissistic personality disorder. disorder. So a lot of the fantasies that he would have, he developed a very grandiose sense of self-importance. Essentially, Ming believed in his fantasies that he was God's gift to women. So in these fantasies that he would have, they were usually sexual. Ming would always be the knight in shining armor. He would come in, charge in, and swoop Mary off her feet. And you know, he was like the hero of the story. But they wouldn't stop there. He would actually go home and write sexual fiction about Mary. He would actually write full-on novels, sexual novels about his teacher. And I'm sure he was probably pleasuring himself at the same time. And all of these sexual novels and all of the fiction and all of the fantasies, it became his whole life. It completely consumed him every single waking moment. He was living in all of these fantasies that he was this really powerful, tough, God's gift to women, and all women wanted him. But he only wanted one woman, and that was Mary. And Mary also realized that the only man in the world for her was her teenage student, Ming. And remember all of this sexual fiction writing, because this does come back up later on in the case. So Ming was in algebra class for the next 2 years, and the whole 2 years he was just yearning after his teacher. And Ming fully believed that he was in love with his teacher. But not just that, he also believed that Mary secretly loved him as well. Like, he was completely delusional. Even though Mary didn't really pay him much attention, she paid him just as much attention as anybody else. But Ming thought that, you know, she was being sly. She didn't want to let on too much to everyone else that she was in love with him. But Ming believed that Mary was constantly thinking about him. Even though she barely looked at him, she was thinking about him. Mary was just too scared to admit her real feelings for Ming. But that didn't matter, because one day she would finally admit her feelings and Ming would come running in and swoop her off her feet, and they would both run off together into the sunset and live happily ever after. So over those 2 years that Ming is in algebra class, his obsessions were just growing and growing and becoming stronger all the time. However, in 1968, Ming is currently 18 years old. He's in his last year of high school. The absolute worst thing that could ever happen to Ming happened. Mary Stopher left her job teaching. So Mary and her husband, Irv, they would do a lot for their church, and they would go on these missionaries to other countries. So they both decided to fly out to the Philippines for an indefinite amount of time on one of these missionaries. And as you can imagine, Ming was absolutely devastated. Ming felt like the love of his life had just disappeared. He didn't know what to do with himself. So he decided to distract himself from his broken heart. He decided to throw himself into his schoolwork, because he was actually a really good student. He was very, very intelligent. He actually had an almost genius level IQ. So he started to get straight A's. He won pretty much every single science fair. He also joined the football team, the basketball team. Ming just seemed to be one of those people where he was good at everything. And when he went on to graduate in the yearbook, Ming was actually voted the student most likely to succeed. Well, if the award was most likely to succeed in committing a horrific act, well then Ming definitely achieved this. After high school, Ming enrolled at the University of Minnesota, which is where both of his parents worked. But after just 1 year at university, Ming's mental health deteriorated rapidly, and he couldn't take the stress of university, and he dropped out after 1 year. And he went back to live with his mom and his two brothers, and this is actually when he set up his own business, an electronic repairs business, and it was actually very successful. It grew pretty big. He had a lot of employees, and later the business was actually valued at $250,000. However, despite his success, Ming completely isolated himself and he was very lonely. He rarely interacted with the other employees. When he got home, he didn't really interact with his mom or his two brothers. He actually just went down to the basement, which is where he was staying, and he just stayed in the basement until he went to work the next day. And he just didn't really talk to anybody. He also stopped looking after his personal hygiene. He rarely showered. And eventually his mom did remarry, and she actually moved to Virginia from Minnesota. But she kept the house, so Ming and his brothers, they still lived in that house. But even though Ming was now living with his brothers, he rarely spoke to them. They still absolutely hated him for the way that he treated them when they were younger, which I do not blame them at all. And this is when his sexual fantasies returned with a vengeance. Because all of those hours that Ming was spending alone in the basement, embracement, he was fantasizing about sex. And he was fantasizing about sex with his teacher, Mary. Even though Ming was now in his 20s, he had still not moved on from his teacher. And Ming would also fantasize about actresses on the TV. And all of the actresses that he fantasized about on the TV, they were all very similar. All the actresses played motherly kind of roles. They also dressed in like that very toned down, very modest kind of dress, very little makeup, no jewelry, which is the exact same way that his mom dressed and also the exact same way that Mary dressed. So the actresses that he would fantasize about were Shirley Jones from the Partridge Family, Florence Henderson, who played Mrs. Brady from the Brady Bunch, and Julie Andrews from The Sound of Music. Yeah. And it just really creeps me out that he was having sexual fantasies about Maria from The Sound of Music. Wow. And when I was looking up these women, because there were a couple that I wasn't quite sure what they looked like, something that I found so bizarre is that they all look so similar. They all have like very short, like blonde hair, and it's all in the same style. They all dress the same. It's just weird, like really is weird. And then remember that I said that Ming's sexual fiction would pop back up? Well, now it does. Because Ming would spend hours and hours pouring his heart out into his sexual fantasy novels. And when I say novel, I actually mean novels. And I know you're probably thinking that these novels, they're going to be very explicit, very graphic, maybe like sexually degrading, like explicit porn, like, you know, the kind of thing that I'm talking about. But they were nothing like that. Ming followed the format of Victorian romance. So we know that Ming's ideal woman is basically a mother, very modest, very homely, like that traditional housewife, very caring, doesn't wear much makeup, blah, blah, blah. We know that that is his ideal woman. Well, his writings reflected that. His stories would always kind of be the same. There would always be a dashing young man, which was him. And the man in these novels was like a sexual dynamo. He was amazing in bed. He was God's gift to women. And in the novels, it really would be very like old fashioned. He would be on a horse and he would like break into like a castle or a grand manner, and he would capture a woman who would be older, maybe married, very motherly, and he would capture this woman, he would put her on his horse, she would try and fight back because she was like, oh no, please don't take me. But then eventually the woman could no longer deny her love and her lust for the man that has just abducted her. I know this is all very dramatic, but this is literally what his novels were about. And something that is just really weird is that in the novels, he would always refer to the women as their like surnames. So it would always be Mrs. something, Mrs. someone else, you know? The women as well, they would always be very demure. They would always be very caring, very motherly. They wouldn't wear any makeup. They would always be in like cardigans and skirts. They would only wear white bras and panties. That was very important, only white. And the women would quite often be married to a husband that couldn't sexually satisfy them. And also their husbands couldn't get them pregnant. So in the novels, when Ming would capture the women, he would be able to sexually satisfy them. And he would also be able to get them pregnant. And the novels, they always ended the same. The women could no longer resist Ming's perfect body. They would fall madly in love with him, and Ming was the only one that would be able to sexually gratify them. And all of the women would long to have Ming's babies. It's all delusional, isn't it? It's absolutely crazy. And you actually can read some of his novels online, which I had the unpleasant experience of doing. And something that I noticed in his novels is that they were a little bit graphic at times, but the focus was mainly the woman falling in love with Ming. Them wanting to have a baby with him was also a key part. Romance seemed to be the key desire of these novels and making a family. And I do have some of the novel here, which I will read to you. So sit down, let's gather for Ming's novels. I'm sorry, I do not know how I am going to get through reading this without laughing. I'm laughing now. Oh my God. Okay. Compose yourself, Danielle. Okay, let's go. So all of this is, quote, Ming touched the warmth of her reproductive organ. I just can't. Oh my God. He would always have very medical or scientific descriptions. It was just so bizarre. Okay, so then I will continue reading. Miss Tompkins wrapped her small arm around Ming's strong shoulder, brushing her breast against his bulging bicep. In her seductive way, Miss Tompkins said, "Yes, you and I are going to first make passionate love, then tenderly engage in sexual intercourse." Miss Tompkins would then draw him close. Her thirst would be initiated, and in complete submission to him, she would open up again and ask Ming for a deep, commingling stab, really. Very raunchy. Their copulations were complete and satisfying. Miss Tompkins would vividly remember the special sensations as Ming's profusion of sperm came spurting into her, and her own orgasm in time with his outburst of joy. I have never heard anything described like that. I'm sorry, I've got to read that again. Ming's profusion of sperm came spurting into her. I'm sorry, I still have a little bit more. Do you want to hear some more? As her body was convulsing uncontrollably during her climaxes, Miss Tompkins cried out Ming's name repeatedly, rhythmically, asking him to love her some more. Oh my God, this next bit. Oh no, this is definitely the worst one. Oh no. This is the last one, I swear. If you want to go read any more, you're going to have to find it yourself. Even though Ming had finished and was withdrawing from her sperm-filled vagina, Miss Tompkins would wrap her arms tightly around Ming's neck and ask for rapidly repeated kisses. She kept wiggling her hips about in small circular gyrations, and her darkly fluffy pubic hair excited Ming as his penis touched her vulva. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm done. That's enough. But hopefully that gives you a good idea of what Ming's sexual fantasy novels were about. But there was one novel where he rambled on like this for 15,000 words. 15,000 words. And most of the women in the novels, even though they had different names, they were all based and focused on his teacher, his maths teacher, Mary. And soon his fantasies, he would want to make them a reality in the most horrific way. So now we get to the mid-70s. Ming is now around 25 years old. And at this point, Ming's behavior was just becoming more and more disturbing. And a big part of this was a film that was released called The Teacher. And The Teacher has been described as an erotic coming of age film. And I haven't watched it, do not have an interest in watching it, but basically the film is about a provocative 28-year-old teacher, and she wanted to divorce her neglectful husband so she could be in a relationship with one of her students. And as you can imagine, it was very overly sexualized, involves a lot of nudity. And when you think of like the topic of like the student being underage, it's like, really? That's what we're going to do? Okay. But anyway, Ming watched this film and he was like, oh my God, this is my life. He became convinced that that film was his life, that Mary, his math teacher, wanted to leave her husband and wanted to start a relationship with her former student, which was Ming. He thought that it was a sign that they were supposed to be together. And Ming watched this film over and over again. And he wrote a lot of basically fan fiction from this film where he based it that he was the student and Mary was the teacher. And his sexual behavior towards his mom was also still incredibly creepy. So when his mom would come and visit, because remember that Ming still lives with his brothers. So when his mom would come and visit, she would obviously stay in her old room. And Ming, even though he's 25 years old, in the middle of the night, he would still creep into her room and get into the bed next to her. And his mom kept telling him, Ming, you need to get out of my bed. This is incredibly inappropriate. Because as well, he was just really creepy. I think we can all imagine like he was just being touchy-feely. Oh God, I don't even want to think about it. And eventually his mom would get him to leave, but Ming was so angry about this. He felt so rejected that after this incident, he actually barely showed his mom any attention ever again. And this whole incident with his mom further proved to Ming that Mary was the only woman for him. And it's just so, so disgusting. I truly think that Ming does want his mom sexually. I do truly 100% believe that. And I do think that Ming's sexual desires for his mom have just been transferred onto Mary. So Ming just kept continuing on obsessing over Mary, even more so now. But the thing is, Ming also thought that Mary was obsessed with him. Even though approximately 7 to 8 years had passed since Mary and Ming had even seen each other, Ming was still convinced that Mary wanted him. He was so delusional that it was was almost like he thought the film, The Teacher, was real. So Ming thought to himself, okay, I need to go and track her down. So he got to work. He started poring over address books, determined to find her. He went through directories. He was doing everything that he could to try and find his old teacher. And then he finally found it, an address for a person called Irving Stouffer. And this person lived in Minnesota. They actually lived not too far from Ming. So Ming was convinced, this must be Mary. This must be her husband. So late one evening, Ming traveled to that address. He waited outside of the address for a little while, scoping out the place, until he finally got the confidence and he burst into that home with a gun. Now, as soon as Ming was inside the house, he found an elderly couple. And this elderly couple was obviously not Mary and her husband. Ming started screaming at this elderly couple to get on the floor, and he tied them up. And Ming started searching through the house, and he actually found a picture of Mary and her husband in the house, which further proved to Ming that this was the right house. Mary must be here somewhere. So Ming goes back to the elderly couple with the picture of Mary and starts demanding, where is this woman? Where is this woman? And the elderly man answered, that's my daughter-in-law and my son, which is her husband. She's not here. She's actually living in another country. And when Ming heard that Mary was living in a different country, his heart just dropped. And as we know, Mary did leave for the Philippines on a missionary. Well, she had actually returned to the US, but now she was back in the Philippines on another project. So she could be in the Philippines for years. So following this, Ming left the elderly couple and he said to them that if they went to the police, he would track them down and kill them. Well, it turns out the elderly couple, they did go to the police to report this. But because this couple, they didn't know who Ming was, Ming was never tracked down and it was just marked as a burglary. So Ming went back to his life of complete isolation. Mary was in another country. When was he going to save her from her husband? When were his dreams going to come true? His two brothers also eventually left home. So Ming was truly on his own now in that house. And he thought to himself, I'm going to have to play the long game. Mary will return eventually. And when she does, I will have her. So the years went by and Ming was constantly on the lookout for any sign of Mary. Had she returned? And then in 1979, which was approximately 5 years after Ming had broke into the elderly couple's home and held them at gunpoint, Ming found out that Mary Stouffer was returning to the US. He found this out because one day he was combing through a local newspaper and he came across an announcement saying that Mary Stouffer was coming back, and it talked about all of her work in the Philippines with her church. And Ming was thrilled. He could not believe his luck. He was over the moon. He believed that his dreams were about to come true. Mary and Ming were destined to be with one another. And within no time at all, Ming managed to track down where Mary was. Mary and her husband were living in an apartment on the campus of Bethel University, which was only about 5 miles away from Ming's home. Ming also learned that Mary and her husband now had 2 children, a girl named Beth, who was currently 7 years old, and a younger boy called Steve. And as soon as Ming found Mary, Ming began a huge, intense stalking campaign of Mary and her whole family. Mary would quite often give presentations at the university about her missionary work, and Ming would always be there. He would always be sat in the audience, but Mary would never know. Whenever Mary would leave the house to run errands, Ming would follow. Whenever she would attend church every single Sunday, Ming was always there, sat creepily in the back row. Ming managed to memorize the schedules of all the family, their hobbies, their interests, what they liked, the food that they liked, the toys that her children played with. He would spend every waking moment thinking about Mary, stalking her, learning about her, learning about her family, her routine. Every evening, he would sit outside of her apartment and watch her before returning home and watching his favorite erotic film, The Teacher. And the whole time he was stalking Mary, he truly believed that they were still the characters from that film, that Mary secretly wanted him. She was longing for Ming to track her down, to capture her, to finally sexually satisfy her. Ming truly is the definition of delusional. And Ming was content with stalking Mary for a while. He never approached her. He would literally just be lurking in the shadows. And Ming is stalking Mary Mary for approximately a year. And then at some point, Ming's younger brother, Ron, moves back in with him. But Ming just carries on the stalking, because remember, Ron doesn't even like Ming, so they don't even interact with each other. And then we get to the spring of 1980, and something very significant happens. Because whilst Ming was stalking Mary at one of her church services, the Stouffer family stood up and announced that they were going to go back to the Philippines to carry out another missionary project. And this time, they would be gone for 4 years. And when Ming found out this, he basically had a panic attack. He was thinking, oh my God, I cannot lose Mary again. Oh my God, she's going to be gone again for 4 years. Ming was actually tempted to grab Mary right there in the church and run off with her. But he composed himself. He knew that he needed to go about this in a better way. And he decided that he was going to act. He was going to make sure that Mary never left the country ever again. He was going to kidnap Mary. That was his destiny. They were meant to be together. So he preps his home, ready for the kidnap. He actually clears out a closet in the basement, which he plans to keep Mary inside. He buys some chains for the basement, which he attaches to the wall. He buys blankets, pillows. He buys all of Mary's favorite foods, because he's been stalking her for the past year and he knows pretty much everything about Mary. And he sets up his own little dungeon to hold Mary indefinitely until she falls in love with him. And what is even crazier is that Ming's brother Ron is living in the house. And I don't have a clue of the layout of this house, but that is just crazy that Ming is prepared to kidnap someone and hold them in his house when his brother is living there. So then once the house is all ready and prepped for Mary's kidnap, Ming actually attempts to kidnap Mary, and he tries to kidnap her on a number of occasions. On the 5th of May, 1980, Ming heads to Mary's apartment building with a blowtorch, which he uses to shatter a glass that allows him to enter the apartment unit, but all of the commotion woke up some neighbors, so Ming got scared and ran off. 9 days later, on the 14th of May, Ming tried to kidnap Mary again. He managed to get inside the main apartment unit this time, but their neighbors caught him tampering with the building security system, and again, Ming got scared and he ran off. And then this next attempt is so creepy. Oh my God, this is literally my worst nightmare, and I'm sure it's probably a lot of people's worst nightmare. But during the third kidnapping attempt, Ming managed to break into, I don't even know, I think it was like a basement room underneath Mary's apartment, and Ming cut a hole in the ceiling of the basement, and it turns out that the hole that he had cut in the ceiling was the space directly under Mary and her husband's bed, and the hole was big enough for Ming to get his whole head through. So Ming puts his head through this hole, and Ming is just there, his head under their bed, and Mary and her husband are in bed and they're just talking, and Ming is there under their bed just listening. Oh my God, if that is not your worst nightmare, I don't know what is. Oh my God. Imagine having a stalker that is that obsessed with you that they're literally under your bed. Like they've cut a hole in your floor and they're under your bed. That is literally taking the boogeyman under your bed to a whole nother level. And Ming decided that he couldn't abduct Mary right there and then, even though he had access to her apartment, because Ming knew that he would never be able to abduct Mary in front of her husband. He couldn't overpower him. But when he was there creeping under the bed, Mary and her husband were having a conversation, and Mary said in that conversation that she had a hairdressing appointment the next day. So Ming, listening, thought, great, that is my opportunity, because she will be alone then. So we get to Friday, the 16th of May, 1980. And this will finally be the day that Ming, who is now 29 years old, will come face to face with the love of his life, Mary Stouffer, who is currently 36 years old. And this is just 4 days before she is due to leave for the Philippines. And this would be the day that would be the worst nightmare for Mary Stouffer. Because on this day, she did have a hairdressing appointment, but she wasn't alone. She was with her 8-year-old daughter, daughter, Beth. So at around 4:30 p.m. on that day, Mary and her daughter left the hair salon. They both made their way over to Mary's car and they saw this man, and he was wearing like a big oversized leather jacket. He was wearing sunglasses. He definitely looked a little bit suspicious. And of course, this man was Ming Sen Chu. And Mary saw him and thought maybe he wants to ask directions. She thought that this man had completely innocent intentions because she always saw the good in people. But obviously we know that Ming did not have good intentions at all. And he jumped out on Mary and Beth and he was holding a gun. He immediately grabbed Mary's daughter Beth and held the gun at Beth. And he screamed at Mary to get in the car and drive, otherwise he would shoot. Now Mary, seeing that Ming had a gun pointed towards her daughter, did everything that she was told. Mary got into the driver's side, Ming got into the passenger side, and Beth was in the back seat. Beth was still being held at gunpoint, so Mary drove the car. As Mary is driving, she is saying things like, "Do you need money? What's wrong? Do you need help? I'll give you money. Just let me pull over. I'll give you anything that you want. Just please don't harm my daughter." And when Mary was saying all of these words, it was in that moment that Ming realized that Mary didn't know who he was. Mary didn't recognize him. As far as Mary was concerned, this was a complete stranger that was holding a gun to her daughter. And Ming's world completely shattered, because in his mind, for 15 years, he had been fantasizing about this moment, about Mary. He had convinced himself that Mary secretly loved him. And he was so infuriated. He was so angry. He was like, how does she not remember me? So this was not going to plan at all. Mary didn't have a clue who he was. And also, there was another problem. Beth, the daughter, she was not supposed to be there. Ming wanted Mary all to himself. He didn't want her daughter. As far as Ming was concerned, Beth represented Mary's old life. And Ming wanted to start a new life with Mary and have children with her, not Beth. However, Ming knew that he couldn't harm Beth because Mary would never forgive him. And ultimately, his goal was to kidnap Mary and make her fall in love with him. So he knew that he couldn't harm Beth because that wouldn't happen. So Ming just realized, well, okay, looks like Beth is coming with us then. And finally, after driving for a while, Ming gets Mary to pull over. They're in a secluded area and he forces Mary and Beth into the trunk of the car. He ties them up and he blindfolds them, shuts the trunk, and then Ming drives around a little bit more. And this is where we get to the second part of Ming's plan, transferring Mary and now Beth into his van, because he knew he had to ditch Mary's car. And he had parked his van in a secluded area earlier on in the day. So finally, after driving around for quite a while, trying to confuse Mary and Beth in the trunk, he pulls up next to his van to transfer them both into it. However, this is when another innocent child would get sucked into this case in the most horrifying way. So when Ming went round to the trunk to transfer Mary and Beth into the van, what he didn't realize is that there was a nearby park and two young boys named Timmy and Jason were playing in that park and they could see Ming and his van and the car. And one of the boys, Jason Wilkman, was just 6 years old and he has been described as an incredibly sweet and happy child. He loved exploring, he loved being outdoors, and he was extremely inquisitive. So Jason noticed Ming. He was watching him curiously, and when Ming opened the trunk of Mary's car, Jason heard the biggest commotion, because it turns out that Mary and Beth, they were tied up, but they had managed to free themselves. So when Ming opened the trunk, they were fighting back and screaming, and this is what Jason heard. So Jason, being the inquisitive child that he was, he walked over to the car to see what was going on. He was just so innocent, you know, just wanting to know what was going on. He wanted to just talk to Ming, like ask him, is everything okay? And Jason got closer to the car and he was able to see in the trunk and he saw Mary and Beth. And this is when Ming swung round and saw Jason just stood there staring at him. Ming immediately panicked because, again, this was not his plan. He had purposely parked his van in a secluded area. He thought that no one was around. And all of a sudden, Jason This little boy was now a witness to what he was doing. So without hesitation, Ming grabbed Jason and also placed Jason in the trunk of the car. He then shut the trunk, which now has Mary, Beth, and now Jason in, and he drove off in a panic. He didn't transfer anyone to his van. He just drove off again in Mary's car. Now remember, Jason had a friend at the park, Timmy. And Timmy, he never went over, but he saw the whole thing. And he went running home to his mom and told her everything that happened, that Jason had been taken by a man in a green car. Police immediately rush out and they're on the lookout for this car. They have the description. And a search was launched for Jason. Over the next few hours, the park was soon filled with police officers searching for Jason. I just want to point out that Ming's van is still there. Did they not find that suspicious? Maybe look at it? I don't know. Meanwhile, Ming is still driving around, basically in circles around the local area because he doesn't want to go too far. And he is panicking because he's still in Mary's car. And he knows that it's only a matter of time until Mary gets reported missing, and then they'll start looking for her car, which he is in. So Ming knows that he has to ditch Mary's car as soon as possible. And things were just really not going to plan for Ming. He has Beth in the car, which he never wanted her in the car in the first place. And now he has Jason. And he just kept thinking, what is he supposed to do with this kid? And this is when he came to the awful conclusion that the only way that he was going to deal with this situation with Jason was to murder him. Which is just like, oh my God, why? This poor innocent little boy, he was just playing in the park. And the exact details are not known, but it's thought that Ming found a tire iron in the car, pulled over to a secluded area, lured Jason into the woods, and hit him twice over the head, killing him instantly. And then he just buried his body in dirt and leaves and just left him there. And I'm just like, why did that have to happen? And it just makes me so angry. Following this, Ming drives around for a few more hours. It actually really is crazy that Ming is just driving around the local area in that green car, and the police have the description of the car. How have they not found him? Mary and Beth do ask, what did he do with Jason? Ming lied to them and said that he had abandoned Jason in an area that he would be found. And I did wonder, why didn't he tell them that he had murdered Jason? Because that would definitely be intimidating. That would make them even more scared of him, easier to control. But then I realized that Ming's whole aim here is to make Mary fall in love with him. Just like in his novels, it's all about the love, the romance. And he doesn't want Mary to think badly of him. He is literally kidnapping her and her daughter, so I don't know why his brain thinks like that. But in Ming's twisted mind, he thinks that Mary will forgive him for all of this. But she may not forgive him if she finds out that he has murdered an innocent little boy. That was just my thought process anyway. I don't know if that's true. I just thought that. So night eventually falls and Ming knows that he has to ditch Mary's car now. And even though the place where he abducted Jason is swarming with police, Ming manages to pull alongside his van. Don't know how he did this. I don't know how the police did not see him do this. And he manages to transfer Beth and Mary into his van without anyone seeing him, and then he drives off. And finally, just after midnight, Ming arrives at his home. He drags Mary and Beth out of the back of the van, and he leads them inside at gunpoint and forces them down to the basement and to the closet that he has prepped. Once in the basement, Ming removes Mary and Beth's blindfold, and they are both even more terrified. Ming then leads them to the open closet that he has prepped for Mary. And it looked like, I don't know, like Harry Potter's cupboard under the stairs. Like literally, it just had like blankets on the floor, pillows. It had a bucket for the toilet in there, and then some chains on the walls. He chained both of them to the wall and he shut the door and he left them in complete darkness. And Beth was just screaming and crying. And Mary was trying to keep it together for her daughter. And all Mary could do with her daughter was pray that they got out of this situation. But Mary felt completely helpless. She didn't know where she was. She didn't know what this man wanted, and she didn't even know who this man was. The next day finally comes, and the search for Mary and Beth was already underway. After the crazy events of yesterday, Mary's husband, Irv, had obviously noticed that his wife and daughter didn't return home from the hair salon, and he reported her missing to the police straight away. And Mary and Beth were reported missing a few hours after Jason was. And when Irv phoned phoned up the police to report his wife and daughter missing, Irv gave a description of Mary's car to the police. And the police, taking down this description, were like, hang on a minute, this is the car that is linked to the disappearance of Jason. So this is how the two cases were connected to one another, and the police were panicking because they were like, oh my God, we have a woman that has been abducted, an 8-year-old girl and a 6-year-old boy. And because of this, the FBI were immediately called in and the search for all three of them started, and Mary's car was soon found. But other than that, the FBI, they didn't have a clue who had done this. So it is now the 17th of May 1980, the day after Mary and Beth have been kidnapped, and Ming drags Mary out of the closet. He leaves Beth locked up in the closet alone, and this is when the first proper conversation between Mary and Ming occurs. Because you see, after all of these years, after basically 15 years, Ming had been dreaming of this moment. But so far, things hadn't gone to plan. Fantasy didn't live up to reality, and Ming wanted to know why Mary didn't know who he was. So this is basically when Ming starts interrogating Mary. He drags Mary out of the closet, he sets up a camcorder because he wants to record all of this and he wants to remember everything. And you actually can read transcripts of some of these conversations. But Ming was basically saying to Mary, oh, we have something in common. We have a common background here. Don't you remember someone from when you were teaching? I'm giving you a clue here. And Mary was completely dumbfounded. She was like, what is he asking me? Like, what? Do I remember somebody when I was teaching? Like, what? And Mary just went, no, I don't remember anybody from when I was teaching. And Ming responded, you don't remember any of the students that you taught? So she was trying to rack her brain, and she was like, yeah, I remember one student. He was kind of a troublemaker. His name was Bob. And oh my God, this angered Ming so much. He was like, oh, so you only remember the troublemakers? Oh, I see how it is. What about the good students? What about the hard-working students like me? And this is when it first dawned on Mary that he was a student of hers. And she said, you were a student in my class? Really? And he was like, yeah, I know it's only been like 15 years, but it's burned into my brain. I remember everything about that class, where the desks were, what you wore, when you were walking around. I remember everything. How dare you not remember me? And Mary was just so shocked. She was just like, what do you want with me? And Ming decided to tell Mary a complete lie. He was too embarrassed to admit to Mary that he had had a crush on her, that he was in love with her, and he had been in love with her for the past 15 years. He was too embarrassed to admit that, so he made up a completely fabricated story. Ming told Mary that one time she had given him a bad grade. She had given him a B-, which, side note, a B- is not a bad grade. But this is what Ming said, that she had given him a B-, which was a bad grade. And because she had given him a bad grade, he had missed out on a scholarship. And instead, he was drafted into the army, sent to Vietnam, and became a prisoner of war. So basically, everything that went wrong in Ming's life was Mary's fault for giving him a B-, even though this was all complete BS. None of this happened. Ming was never in the army. He never went to Vietnam. And he certainly wasn't a prisoner of war. Ming was only telling Mary this fabricated story in the hopes that Mary would feel guilty about ruining his life by giving him a B-. And this first conversation went on for hours, and Mary was just sat there so confused. Beth was still locked in the closet completely on her own. And Ming also told Mary another lie. He told her that he would let her go in 4 days' time so she could still go on her trip to the Philippines. But this was all a lie. Ming was not planning on letting Mary go ever. But Ming said, in the meantime though, Mary needed to be punished for what she had done to him. And how was Ming going to punish Mary? Well, he was going to sexually assault her. So following this interrogation, Ming dragged Mary to the bed, and Ming told Mary that he was going to rape her. And Mary begged for him not to do this, but Ming just ignored her pleas and said that Mary needed to feel the emotional pain that he had been through all of these years. And he filmed the whole thing on his camcorder so that he could keep a record for his own pleasure. Following the assault, Mary actually asked Ming, "Why are you filming this?" And Ming responded, "Once I've released you, I can look back at these tapes and know that I have gotten revenge on you." And then Mary was locked back in the closet with Beth, where they would now be left alone for hours in complete darkness. And the days start to pass. Mary and Beth are just locked in this closet pretty much 24 hours a day. All they have is some blankets and pillows and a bucket for the toilet. And every day, Ming would prepare food for Mary and Beth, and he would always prepare their favorite food because Ming knew what their favorite food was because he had stalked them for so long. And this just really creeped out Beth and Mary because they were like, how does this man know our favorite food? And they were never allowed out of the closet. They were not allowed to shower. And you can probably imagine the smell that was in that closet, seeing as they only had a bucket for a toilet. The only time they were allowed out of the closet was when Mary was dragged out of the closet multiple times every single day to be sexually assaulted. And he filmed every single encounter. So now we get to the 4-day mark, which is obviously the day that Ming said that he would release them. However, the day came and went and Ming did not keep his word. Every day Ming would just go to work and leave Beth and Mary tied in that closet. However, after the 4 days, the punishments actually started to get a little bit more severe because Ming started to separate Mary and Beth. Just for psychological torture, Ming would drag Beth, the 8-year-old, out to his van and chain her up in the van and lock her in there. And he would leave Beth in this van on her own for hours. And Beth, she's only 8 years old. She's so scared. She's alone. She's panicking. And in order to cope, she actually starts to pull out her hair as almost like a coping mechanism. And whenever Mary and Beth were together, Mary always put on a brave face for her daughter. Beth didn't actually know that her mom was being sexually assaulted multiple times a day. Mary never said a single word to her. Mary always just tried to encourage her daughter to stay strong, stay positive. There would be a way out of this. And amazingly, with a stroke of good fortune, in the closet, Mary found an old dry cleaning receipt that had Ming's address on it. So now at least Mary knows where they are. So Mary memorized the address. She also got Beth to memorize the address. She then destroyed the receipt so Ming wouldn't know that they knew where they were. And this is very important, so remember this. And meanwhile, whilst Mary and Beth are chained up, their disappearance started to appear on the news. And Ming soon realized that Mary's car had been found. He had just abandoned her car in a ditch and he was really hoping that they wouldn't find it. Ming was really hoping that the police would just think that Mary and Beth have driven off on their own accord. So because he was panicked and he wanted the police off his trail, he got Mary to write a letter home to her husband saying that she was not coming home. And once Mary had sent the letter, Ming was convinced that the police would stop looking for her. The police saw straight through it. They did not believe this letter at all. However, the FBI told the media to stop reporting on the case. They wanted to give Ming a false sense of security that they had stopped looking, hoping that he would mess up. The investigation into Jason was also still going on. Very sadly, they still thought that Jason was a missing person. They had not found his body, which is just so incredibly heartbreaking. And then sadly, Mary and Beth's captivity turned into days, and then it turned into weeks. They were still chained up in that closet with no hope of escaping. At this point as well, Mary and Beth had noticed that they could hear other footsteps in the home, and they thought that there was someone else living in the house that they were in, which of course they were right. We have to remember in all of this that Ming's brother, Ron, is living in the same house, which is just crazy. So Mary and Beth, when Ming was out at work, they would bang on the walls trying to get the attention of the other person living in the house. However, Ron, he never really seemed to notice the noise. I think at this point, they had split the house into different apartments. So Ming and his brother Ron, they really did live completely separately. They had separate kitchens, separate bathrooms, separate living areas, separate everything. And later on, he did actually say that sometimes he did hear some strange noises, but he just thought that Ming had gotten a girlfriend. And as time passes and Ming realizes that his brother Ron hadn't noticed a thing, and the police weren't looking for Beth and Mary at his home, they didn't know who Ming was, Ming started to get a lot more comfortable and cocky, and he started to let Mary and Beth out of the closet. Mary also convinced Ming that Beth needed a healthy and nutritious diet because she was a growing girl, and Ming agreed. Ming went to the grocery store. He bought all of this healthy, nutritious food. He allowed Mary and Beth in the kitchen to cook, and then they would all sit around the dining table like a little family and eat dinner together every single day. And I can just imagine Ming. This is his whole dream. He would have been loving every single moment of this. Ming also allowed them both to have a shower. He bought Beth books and board games. They would all sit and watch TV together. It really is like they're this happy, loving little family. But they were locked up in the closet when Ming was at work. They were only allowed out when he was there. And you might be thinking, did they try to escape? Like, why aren't they trying? But the thing is, Ming always had his gun on him. And he had always said that if they tried to escape, he would kill them. And Mary believed him. They also had no opportunity to escape because even though they were allowed out of the closet, Ming still kept a watchful eye on them. However, despite the new freedom that Mary and Beth had, there was one thing that Mary couldn't escape, and that was the daily sexual assaults. Ming would drag Mary every single day, multiple times a day, to the bed and sexually assault her and record the whole thing. And Mary, every single time she tried to fight back, she screamed out, she squirmed, she resisted as much as she could. That is the one thing that she did not want to comply with. And Ming kept pleading with her to enjoy it. Because remember, all of this is about love and romance for Ming. That is what he wrote about in his novels, love, romance. He wants the woman to fall in love with him. So Ming would ask Mary to be tender with him, to touch him, to care for him, to caress him, to kiss him. But Mary, every single time, she refused. However, the more times this happened, the more times that Mary turned him down, Ming started to get performance issues, if you know what I mean. And he blamed it all on Mary. He said that he could not perform because she was not telling him that she loved him, that she wasn't kissing him, that she didn't care for him. And after one night, after Ming was pleading with Mary to kiss him and Mary was refusing, no, 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 Ming flew into a rage. He grabbed Beth out of the closet, got a plastic bag and placed it over her head and said that he was going to suffocate her. And Ming said that if she agreed to kiss him, he would stop suffocating her. And of course, Beth, she has this bag over her head. She is screaming. She is crying. Air is running out. And Mary is going into a panic because she didn't want to give in to Ming. She didn't want to give him what he wanted. She didn't want to kiss him. But Mary couldn't take it anymore. And she gave in and she kissed Ming on the cheek, hoping that that would be enough. But Ming was like, nope, that's not good enough. He still didn't release Beth. So Mary kissed Ming on the lips and Ming was finally satisfied and he took the bag off Beth's head. And you can imagine that both Mary and Beth from this were completely traumatized. And this also further cemented in Mary's mind that Ming was capable of murder. So a few more days pass and we are now in week 3 of captivity. It is crazy that they have been kept in that closet for 3 weeks. And it is so crazy that they haven't been found. Ming literally lives around the corner. So at week 3, Ming, being very cocky, decided that he wanted to take his new little family on vacation. I cannot believe it. How cocky and arrogant is Ming that he thinks that he can just go on vacation with Mary and Beth? Well, apparently there was a trade conference going on in Chicago, and you have to remember that he is a business owner. Yeah, he's running a business whilst doing all of this. So there was a conference in Chicago that he wanted to go to, and of course he had to take Beth and Mary with him. So he hired an RV and off they went across state lines, which did cross Ming Ming's mind, he thought, oh, that might be a bit risky because if I get caught, I will probably face more punishment by crossing state lines, but oh well. So in the RV, he covered all of the windows with cardboard. He also had Mary and Beth tied up in the RV, and he also did research on other kidnappers to make sure that he learned from their mistakes. And he told Mary that if she tried to get anyone's attention, he would kill her and Beth instantly and the stranger that she told. So it was just before midnight on the 9th of June that they set off on their little trip. So once they got to Chicago, Ming went off to the trade conference. But then after that, he decided to take them both out sightseeing. Have you ever heard of something so crazy? This is how cocky and confident he is. He has so much control over Mary and Beth that he is able to take them out in public and they don't say anything. They are so scared that he will kill them. So Ming took Mary and Beth to the mall. He bought them some new clothes, which Mary had to pay for. They went to Sears, they went to Kmart, they all went out for food. But Mary tried to be clever during this trip because, like I just said, Mary had to pay for everything. And she used a traveler's check for one item that she paid for, hoping that this would get flagged in some sort of system because obviously she knew that she was reported missing. She thought that the FBI would be able to track that check, know where she was at least, and hopefully save her. However, the check never got alerted to the FBI and they didn't know about it. At one point as well, when Mary and Beth were on their own in the RV, Beth was brave enough to remove a little bit of cardboard from the window and she saw a group of teenagers outside. They were like playing, hanging out, and Beth got their attention and she told this group of teenagers that her and her mom had been abducted by this man that was going to kill them. But this group of teenagers, they didn't take Beth seriously. They thought that she was just messing around and they walked off laughing. So a few days later, they all return from their little vacation to Chicago. And at this point, Ming was feeling on top of the world because he truly felt like he had this little family. His fantasies really were becoming a reality. And Ming was so cocky that he decided to grant Mary and Beth one wish, which was that Beth was allowed to phone home to her dad, Irv, to wish him a happy Father's Day. So Beth phoned home. And I'm like, what? Ming is so cocky that he is not going to get caught. He is allowing Beth to phone home to wish her dad a happy Father's Day. He did have a few rules though. Beth was not allowed to mention Ming. She was not allowed to mention where she was, anything about the house, nothing like that. All she was allowed to say was happy Father's Day. And unbelievably, there is actually a recording of this phone call, which I will play for you right now, but it is just so heartbreaking because you can just hear the emotion in the dad's voice.
Hello, Irv speaking.
Hello, Dad?
Yes, Bethy. Are you okay?
Yep.
Is Mommy okay?
Yes.
That's good. Oh, I'm...
Daddy,
yes?
Happy Father's Day.
Oh, thank you so much, sweetie.
You're fine, Dad.
Oh, I'm so glad.
We can't talk anymore.
When can you come home?
I don't know.
Can I talk
to you, okay, Dad?
Can I talk to him?
No.
Okay, you call again.
I'll see you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye, sweetie.
And I just can't imagine what was going through the dad's mind at that point. This was the first time that he had confirmation that his wife and daughter were still alive. And obviously this was also good news for the FBI, and the search for Mary and Beth now went into overdrive. So a few more days pass. Mary and Beth are stuck in this twisted reality that Ming has created. And it is now the 20th of June, which is 5 whole weeks since they have been abducted. They have been in this situation for 5 weeks. And it was actually Mary's birthday. And Ming forced them all to sit round the table, sing Mary happy birthday, whilst she blew out her birthday candles. During this captivity as well, Ming had continued to write his fantasy novels. However, his novels were a little bit different now because they always included a woman and her daughter, i.e. Mary and Beth. And again, these novels, they would have a very similar theme to what they did before. Ming somehow gets into the home of the woman, then rapes the woman. The woman has a sexual awakening and realizes that, oh my God, Ming is a sex god. This is what she has always wanted, and runs off with him and takes her daughter with them. So yeah, that is basically what he thinks his reality is. And then it gets to the 4th of July, and Ming again is so cocky that he takes Mary and Beth to a firework display. Again, a little trip like they're a little family. However, something very significant happens on this trip to the firework display, because Mary sees a sheriff's car, and on the back of the car is the phone number to the local sheriff's office. And Mary memorizes this number. And then when she is back at Ming's home and she's back in the closet with Beth, she tells Beth to also memorize this number. And again, this is very significant. And now we get to the 7th of July, which is day 53 of captivity. They have actually been in captivity now for 8 weeks. And you might be wondering, when does this come to an end? Well, thankfully, on the 7th of July, it does. Because on the morning of the 7th of July, Mary woke up just like any other day in the closet, and Ming started rambling on that he enjoyed their little vacation to Chicago. So he's thinking about renting an RV and the family taking a year-long trip in the RV. And when Mary heard this, she was like, no, I cannot allow this to happen. It was in this moment that it dawned on Mary that Ming was never going to let them go. And if they went into that RV on that year-long trip, they would never escape. So it was on the 7th of July, when Ming went out to work as he always did, that Mary decided that she had to act. And there was actually a stroke of luck, because a few days earlier, Mary and Beth had been moved to a different closet because Ron, Ming's brother, was actually out of town for a while. So they had the whole house to themselves. So Ming, being the very caring person that he is, moved Mary and Beth to a slightly bigger closet. And Ming, being very arrogant and cocky, he hadn't taken the same precautions with the new closet as he had with the original closet. Because the original closet, he had reinforced the hinges, he had removed the door handle on the inside so there was no way that they could get out, and he would always place a large piece of furniture in front of the door, so even if they did manage to open the door, they still wouldn't be able to get out. Well, in this new closet, he hadn't done any of that. The door handle was still there, hinges not reinforced, and he didn't put furniture in front of the door because he was so cocky that Mary and Beth wouldn't escape. He had that much control over them. But thankfully, he didn't, because when they were in that new closet, Mary was staring at the hinges of the door, and she was thinking, I think I can make that hinge loose. Like, I think I can get this door off. And on the 7th of July, after hearing his whole story with the RV, this gave her the confidence to act. And she started fiddling with the hinge on the door, and she realized that she could pull the pin out of the hinge and it came clean out. It was almost like it was oiled. Like, literally, the pin just came straight out. And because the pin was out of the hinge, she could actually move the door out of the frame. Mary couldn't believe it. It was literally like a miracle had happened. She could finally taste freedom. However, Beth didn't want to leave the closet. Beth was so scared of Ming. She was like, no, I don't want to leave the closet. The evil man is going to come back. He's going to kill us. We can't leave. However, Mary reassured Beth and said that this is what was supposed to happen. They were supposed to get out, and that Beth needed to trust her, and that they needed to work together to get out of this situation. So both Mary and Beth, they got out of the closet and they walked around the house trying to find a phone. And then they phoned that number that they had memorized on the sheriff's car, and the dispatcher on the other end asked them where they were. And if you remember, Mary had found that receipt with Ming's address on that she had memorized, so she was able to tell the sheriff's office exactly where she was. And the last thing that Mary said on the phone is that if there is a van in the driveway, that means that Ming is home from work. He is armed and he is dangerous and he will shoot. So the sheriff tells Mary to stay put, stay in that house and stay away from all of the windows and take cover. So then Mary puts the phone down, but Beth is crying. She is panicking. She is so stressed. And Beth begs her mom to please let them go outside. Beth wanted to go outside and hide in some bushes and wait for the police. So Mary, ignoring the sheriff, crept outside with Beth, and they managed to hide behind some bushes that was kind of like by a car. And within moments, police arrived at the scene, and Ming is nowhere to be seen. He is still at work. So police break into the home and they frantically search the home for Mary and Beth, but they're not there. And then all of a sudden, the police saw movement by a car, thinking that it was Ming, rush over, guns drawn. And thankfully, they realized in time that it was Mary and Beth. And thankfully, this is the moment where Mary and Beth are finally saved. Following this, Mary and Beth were rushed straight to the hospital. Mary had actually lost 20 pounds during her captivity. They both needed immediate medical attention. And once they had received this, they were both taken down to the sheriff's office for questioning. Now, when they were being questioned, the police kept asking about poor Jason Wilkman, because this whole time they had believed that Jason was also being held captive. But this is when Mary broke the news that they had not seen Jason since the day they were kidnapped. Mary didn't actually know that Jason had been murdered though, but because the police hadn't found him and because he wasn't in that house, this is when everyone came to the horrible conclusion that Ming must have murdered Jason. And this is when the police rush to Ming and arrest him, because he hadn't actually been arrested yet. And when the police arrived at his work, Ming was completely oblivious. Like, he didn't know what the hell was going on. But when Ming was taken into the sheriff's office, they had made a terrible mistake, because as Mary and Beth were being escorted out, they brought Ming in at the exact same time, and Mary and Beth had to come face to face with Ming once again. And Ming started screaming at Mary and Beth, saying, "Why did you do this? What did you tell them? Why did you escape?" Following this, Mary and Beth were finally reunited with their husband and dad, Irv, and their son and brother, Stephen. And the whole family were just over the moon that they had all come through this. However, the ordeal for Mary was not over. Ming was absolutely furious, and he vowed to take revenge on Mary. And I bet you're thinking, hang on a minute, he's been arrested. How does he plan on taking out revenge on Mary? Like, hasn't he done enough? But unfortunately, there is still more to come. Because first of all, Ming tried to hire a hitman when he was in jail. Another inmate was actually due to be released very soon, and Ming offered him $50,000 to go after Mary and kill her. Ming handed this man a check for $1,000. The man accepted the check, said that he would go and do the hit. But then as soon as the man got out of prison, he just cashed the $1,000 and went on his merry way. Following this, Ming tried to escape prison himself to kill Mary himself. And the way he did this was so bizarre. And if I have any electricians, like electrical experts, like watching this, please comment to tell me if this is possible. So Ming collected a load of Kit Kat wrappers, you know, like the tin foil, the Kit Kat wrappers, and he collected a load of them in hoping that using the tinfoil, he could disable the security system. I mean, Ming was an electronics expert. Can that happen? Like, can you do that? Like, seriously? I mean, it didn't work. A security guard had caught on to what he was doing, and he was not allowed in the cafeteria ever again, and he was actually moved to a high security cell. And then finally, on the 9th of September 1980, 2 months after Mary and Beth had escaped, Ming went to trial and he pleaded not guilty. At the trial, Mary was very brave and she showed up to give evidence. And when Mary first walked into the room, Ming actually lunged at her and started shouting, "Why did you leave me? Why did you leave me?" Ming had to be restrained and escorted from the court. And eventually Mary was able to take the stand and give evidence, and she told the courtroom everything. She gave every single detail of her ordeal. The defense did try to use the defense of insanity. However, the defense of insanity failed because Ming, he may have been suffering from a mental illness. However, he was still aware of his actions and he knew what he was doing was wrong. And also Ming had been planning this kidnapping for a very long time. And in the end, Ming was found guilty and was sentenced to 30 years in prison. However, that was just for the offenses against Mary and Beth. Now we need to get on to little Jason, because there was a second trial for Ming because he was being charged with murder of 6-year-old Jason Wilkman. Now, unfortunately, Ming had struck a deal with the police that he would only be charged with second degree murder if he revealed the location of Jason's body. So Ming led the police directly to where he left Jason, and this is when Jason's parents finally discovered the truth about what had happened to their little boy. So then the trial started for second degree murder of Jason, but it wasn't second degree murder. Not at all first degree. So the trial started and Mary showed up again to give evidence against Ming. She wanted to do everything in her power to keep Ming behind bars for as long as possible. So remember in the first trial, Ming had lunged at Mary? Well, unbelievably, the same thing happened again in this trial. Whilst Mary was on the witness stand, Ming managed to get up from where he was sat. He ran over to Mary and he was holding a knife. Somehow Ming had managed to smuggle a knife into the courtroom, and when Ming ran up to Mary with this knife, he slashed her face and her face started pouring with blood. Thankfully, Ming was restrained before he could do any more damage, because I guarantee you he probably wanted to kill Mary in that moment. Mary was immediately taken to hospital and she required 62 stitches, and she was left with a pretty large scar on her face from this. But thankfully, other than the scar, there was no other lasting damage. But I can't believe that he is still trying to seek revenge against Mary. He is still trying to attack her. And following this attack, the trial restarted and Mary again gave evidence. She was not about to give up. And finally, Ming Senshu was found guilty of second degree murder of Jason, and he was sentenced to 40 years in prison. So Ming has finally been sent to prison. However, in the years that passed, Ming has definitely been a nightmare prisoner. He has been caught many times making his own weapons. He has assaulted many other inmates. He has threatened numerous guards. He has also shown no remorse to anything that he did to Mary, to Beth, to Jason. He has refused all treatment and he has eventually been moved to a maximum security facility. But whilst Ming was behind bars, Mary and Beth were able to rebuild their lives. Mary still went to the Philippines with her family just like she had planned. She remained committed to her faith and she continued on doing work for the church and her community. Over the years, Mary and Beth have done countless interviews sharing their story in the hopes that their story will help other survivors out there and let other people know that you can get through this, that you are not alone and there is light at the end of the tunnel. Both are truly inspirational people.
I remember thinking, this isn't really happening to me. What's going on? Is this a dream? I was very scared.
My hands were still tied. We could not reach up and turn on the light. And so the only thing we could do is lie down on that floor. And we just had to try to get some rest because we didn't know what the next day would bring.
And then in 2010, Ming Senshu actually came up for parole and Mary and Beth were terrified. They actually thought that there was a chance he could get released. And Ming had always said to Mary that if he ever gets out, it doesn't matter how old he is, he will hunt her down and he will kill her. And if she's already dead by the time he gets out, he will kill her children. And if they're dead, he will kill her grandchildren and so on. He is like someone possessed. He is so obsessed with Mary that he almost has this mindset that if he can't have her, no one can. And he is so delusional that he thinks that he needs to take revenge on Mary. And he is still to this day holding on to that. However, it has been determined that Ming is just way too dangerous to ever be released. And under Minnesota law, A sexually dangerous person can be held in prison indefinitely until they are deemed safe to be released. And thankfully, Ming does not fit the criteria to be released. He is thankfully still behind bars to this very day. And I pray and I hope that he never gets released, because I truly do think that Ming Senshu is a danger to society. But I 100% think that he is still a danger to Mary, Beth, and the rest of their family. And thankfully, Mary and Beth are still doing well to this day. And I really do wish both of them all of the joy and the happiness in the world and just their whole family. I just hope that they're doing okay. And then there is also Jason Wilkman. And very sadly, I couldn't find anything about him online. I always like to end focusing on the victim and telling you a little bit about them, but I couldn't find anything about Jason. But it's just so incredibly heartbreaking that he was taken at only 6 years old. I do know that he was an only child and his parents lost their only child that day. And I am so sorry to Jason's parents and the ordeal that they went through. And that brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening today. Subscribe or follow to make sure you never miss an episode of The Criminal Makeup. And if you enjoy the show, it would really mean a lot if you could leave a 5-star review, because it really does help out the podcast. In the meantime, if you've been affected by any of the themes in this episode, please take the time to look at the description for this episode for some helpful resources. Special thanks to my producers at Audio Boom Studios, and I'll see you all in the next one.